This is the Voice of America, broadcasting worldwide with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. Today, the second moonwalk by astronauts Alan Shepard and Edgar Mitchell. For a description of their activities, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, the astronauts surprised all of us this morning. They cut their rest and sleep period a bit short in order to start the second lunar excursion early so that they could lift off on time for a rendezvous with Stuart Roosa in the command module up in space. This began yesterday when things began to drop a bit behind during the first extravehicular activity period. And at the moment, the astronauts are outside the spacecraft, have been for a couple of hours, moving toward the top of Cone Crater, the primary geological purpose for this landing site. This is an ancient crater assembly about 1,000 meters or so away from the spacecraft. The astronauts have been having some trouble climbing this last hill. Let's tune in live to the voices of Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell as they climb up the side of this crater.
This area that we're in right now is, we're sampling in, is a pretty darn rugged boulder-strewn area. One of the boulder rocks I sampled is going into 7N.
He's picking up a rock. They're supposed to do very minute descriptions of these rocks to document the points at which they find them very carefully. There's a little routine also in which they photograph each one of them very, very carefully. These are the things the scientists are most interested in. With me also is correspondent Ed Hickey, who's been watching developments through the night here at Houston. Ed, you've been up a good while, and this surprised all of us, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Rhett. Mission Control did not announce it either until the astronauts are ready to egress from the lunar module. No one knew they were going to come out as soon as they did. And they have been out now about 2 hours and 15 minutes, just about. They were giving a go for an extra 30 minutes. They just about used up that time. They are at the top of Cone Crater on the west side. They've described numerous views from what they've seen, and they say the rocks there are different from the rocks in the lowlands and in the mare that they where the lunar module landed, the lower section. And they say some of these rocks are most unusual. They're going to pick up some of them and take them back with them, of course. Scientists believe that the rocks from
the rim of Cone Crater in a boulder field at this position, they will take a magnetometer reading, gather samples, including perhaps a football-sized rock, and photography.
So they're right short of the rim.
The sample turned out to only be about three-quarters of a tube. The area is apparently very rocky, but I did get down into the...
Talking about a tube, a core tube that they insert into the lunar soil.
The regolith, which was white as opposed to... dark brown.
He said it was white, not dark brown.
Shepard reports taking core sample.
The core tube is a device that's about a foot long, and they screw three of these together, and sometimes they can hammer one of these almost a meter into the surface.
I'm trying to get that core tube. It's too granular. Most of the material came out of the tube. I'll just scoop a couple of samples and bag it of the two top layers.
Shepard said that it was mostly granular, this material up near Cone Crater, and he was only able to hammer in about three-quarters of one tube. This would be less than a third of a meter.
I think they're finding a great many things different from what they found around the lunar module. From the description that they've given all the way up to Cone Crater, they did reach the top of Cone Crater just a few minutes before we went on the air on the west side, and now they're going up to the... try to find the highest point.
Ed,
I believe. As I heard them overlooking into the crater, and then they were going up to the very top highest point around the crater, and they have not seen the rim of the crater at that point yet.
And about what sample bag number are you up to now?
These are bags to...
Okay, Fred, up on 12 here. I don't know whether that's consecutive or not.
Now, that's referring to the sample bags in which the rocks are deposited. Then they're sealed up. The bags are numbered so that the documented sample is properly tagged.
Back at the map, having left the LPM,
that's
my
Mitchell.
Time.
He's working on a magnetometer experiment back at the Met now to read the meters.
LPM is aligned about 3 degrees to the north of the east-west line.
This is Ed Mitchell.
Okay, 3 degrees to north.
He's working.
It is level. The bubble just about the center.
All right, he leveled the magnetometer sensors. Then he has to come back about.
The largest block yellows past it.
He has to back off about 20 meters or so to make the reading. Back
that's
to the cart.
25 feet long.
He's about 8 meters away. He said he got that one out about 25 feet this time.
Give me the shovel, please, Ed.
This is the portable magnetometer experiment to measure magnetic phenomena in the lunar surface. The science support room in Mission Control is passing notes on a closed-circuit television monitor to capsule communicator Fred Hayes to pass up to the astronauts. Mitchell's ready to read the LPM, the lunar portable magnetometer. Waiting for an okay from Hayes here in Mission Control.
Hello. You still with us?
Hey, fine, man. You go ahead with the reading.
Read the LPM.
Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. I'm on low scale. 4.9. On X, Y, 4.6. 6.5 X 4.9 Y 4.6
These are readings from the magnetometer.
7.0 X 4.9
There are several parameters.
4.5 D 7.5 And it's still going up. See?
He's reading a meter which is mounted back on the mobile equipment transporter, the cart, and
4.6. Y is 4.4.
And the sensor which he's reporting on, he says he is set out some 25 feet from him, 8 to 9 meters away.
That's then overtaken on low setting, and you can discard the instrument at this point.
Fred Hayes says, okay for the magnetometer readings at the moment. Discard it for the moment. In other words, move on to other things.
And, Al, did you say you had taken a sample of the white boulder, or was that too large a sample?
This is a very interesting rock. The scientists really are...
Well, right now I'm sampling a layer up to this. Bit of a light gray just under the regolith. That was in bag number 9, and bag number 10 was a sample of some of the surface rocks that were right around that area. It looked like kind of a secondary impact that had disrupted the surface regolith and got on down into the gray area.
Right down.
Heart rates on the two crew members down appreciably now. Shepard 108, Mitchell 86. Shepard working harder at this time, taking samples while Mitchell leveling the magnetometer.
A number of times Shepard has gone down on his knees or just dropped to the ground to pick up a rock, and Mitchell has been there to help pop him right back up. In the 1/6 gravity of the moon, it's been very easy to pop right back up to the surface.
Okay, and Ed, is the LPM still in your immediate area then?
The lunar portable magnetometer.
Okay, they wanted a temperature reading off of it.
The scientists in the side room are passing these instructions and requests through, the capsule communicator. Ed Mitchell and Al Shepard on the moon 2 hours earlier than expected in order to make up lost time.
Might explain that they're at Cone Crater, which is about 1,000 meters away from the lunar module. It's a very interesting crater. This is where they wanted to go and this whole purpose of this second lunar excursion. Scientists believe that rocks from this area perhaps are as old as the moon itself, and that's why they want some of these rocks, and that's what the astronauts are doing right at this moment.
Be over there in a minute, not in our immediate vicinity. Definitely
looks worthwhile sampling.
This is Shepard. That's the
fine maker here, and I would like you to sample
from the white boulder. Go ahead, Ed. 125
on the
opium. Roger, copy.
That's his temperature measurement on the magnetometer. These are very sensitive devices. Temperature affects their readings. They're up there on the top of the slope now, next to the rim.
There's a white boulder down there.
Yeah, I saw it.
We can sample both types of boulders right down in the area, so let's go on down there. And can you give us a bill, Houston, about when you'd like us to leave the area?
Let's okay, our estimated time of departure is in about 8 minutes, 7.5 minutes.
About 8 more minutes around Cone Crater. So
okay.
This was the focus of this excursion, is this being near the ejecta blanket, being near the ejecta material that has popped out of the deep lunar surface.
And you know, Red, as I look at our television monitor here, and I'm sure our worldwide audience, perhaps, who might be watching this on television and hopefully listening to us at the same time, or can't see the astronauts. We can't see them either. They're out of range of the camera. All we see is the lunar surface. But this is being beamed worldwide in color television.
The interface that's broken is white. And there's another one that most of it is white. They're right in the same area.
Ed Mitchell's description.
Okay, I assume you're going to sample some of those.
That's where we're headed right now. It's about 50 yards away.
I think we're going to have a lot of happy scientists here, Rhett. They have commented several times on this journey up the 200-meter slope of the various types of rocks that they have, rocks that they've never seen before around the lunar module. I think scientists are going to be elated when they see the returns that the astronauts bring back.
Ed Mitchell sees an interesting rock about 50 yards away. That's some 20 meters or so, and he's going to it. There was a considerably higher slope and a little flat area up toward the crater rim as they traversed, and they found it took them some 20 minutes longer to climb up this hill and take the cart with them than they anticipated.
This is Mitchell. A whole pile of very large boulders here.
I hope they have enough bags left for all they're picking up.
Well, as they did the traverse toward the rim of this crater, they were running behind in number of samples.
They're about on schedule, though. They're not very far behind, if they're at all now. But they are finding many, many interesting rocks and types of soil, which they have repeatedly described during this whole journey up to the Cone Crater, about 1,000 meters away from the lunar module in Antares.
They've been outside for just under 2.5 hours now.
Scientists have learned a great deal already from the experiments and the scientific instruments placed on the moon by the Apollo 14 astronauts. They tried to sight on the laser beam, tried to fire a laser beam to the moon from California earlier today. I haven't yet heard whether that was successful, but they have attempted to do so.
University of Texas has completed a successful laser contact, we understand, within the last hour
right?
or so, yes.
I know they had attempted something. I had not heard if they were successful.
Okay, here's Mitchell's at the big rock.
To get us back on the old timeline here, when you depart here, we'd like to proceed directly to F, weird, and we'll pick back up from that point. En route, you can make grab samples as you see fit.
Now, they've canceled one experiment up at the top of the cone crater rim, the polarimetric experiment.
And another note I'll remind you of later on. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
We're going to cut past one of the crater areas. Rocks. Oh, here's Mitchell.
I'll put it back 13 in. I'll photograph it. There don't seem to be any samples of the white rocks lying around that are small enough for me to sample and be sure it's what I'm looking for.
That's Mitchell looking for one of those rare white rocks. These really turn the scientists on here in Mission Control.
I noticed one thing, Rhett, when they were climbing that, even though they're in 1/6 gravity and they can lope and very easily, and they've all said that it wasn't any problem walking around the moon aside from navigating amongst the craters, but when they were climbing up the Cone Crater, which is 200 meters high, they were breathing very, very hard, and their heart rates went up to about 120 beats per minute, which is higher than it was at liftoff when they blasted off from Cape Kennedy last Sunday.
Mitchell, Shepard just reported picking up several interesting rocks. He's still up around the crater rim. Mitchell's rambled off away from him. When they depart, they're going to go past two of the stop stations, the Flank Crater.
Apollo Control Houston, 134 hours, 24 minutes, 2 hours, 36 minutes. Since cabin depress, two of the stops have been deleted in the traverse. The tasks that were scheduled for Station E will be moved back to Station G. The next stop will be at Station F from...
We'll explain what that bunch of letters mean in just a few minutes as they progress. That's Shepard.
It is, appears to be the prevalent rock of the boas in the area.
Roger, Alway, copy.
I didn't hear that myself, Rhett. What did he say?
He says that was Al Shepard. He is getting a foot...
Wait a minute.
That's Shepard, who says he has a football-sized rock, which is... typical of the prevalent rocks in the boulders of the area. Ed Mitchell contributed a group of particles. They're being urged to move on now by Mission Control. They're about 36 minutes behind the timeline, according to our chart, through the originally planned excursion.
No, Rhett, they have mentioned many several times all the rocks and the various types and sizes and colors that they are picking up, which are going to be hopefully very valuable to the scientists here at the Manned Spacecraft Center. How are they getting all these rocks back to the lunar module?
On the cart, in bags, then they will pack them in the rock boxes.
Well, they're not carrying them in their arms, obviously.
No.
They have too many.
Leaving Cone Crater now. Grab samples. Pick up things that look interesting. That's the instruction from Capcom Fred Hayes, passed on from the scientists.
To the north, just to the left of North Triplet. The North Triplet appears to be right behind the limb.
Yeah.
Agree? It's halfway between the two large boulders and one way down.
This crater they call Weird Crater is Station F. They went by Station D on the way up to the top of the rim.
These rocks are bulbous in this field here. It's going to be very weathered. Obviously not by atmosphere, but but he wrote it by some process.
That's Shepard.
They all show cracks. They show evidences of being broken up, either by impact or subsequently. And it looks to me as though these rocks are really pretty old.
Al Shepard says the rocks...
Roger, Al, and do you have anything left on the 16-millimeter? I said been running on the bed.
The rocks and boulders very weathered in this area.
Now follow the progress.
Roger.
Rocks, many of them are cracked, broken up, probably from impacts in the past, in the centuries leading up to man's first seeing. That's Mitchell asking Shepard a question. They're now going back down the side of the mountain.
If you come across any boulders large enough, we might fill the comp check on the way down if you hadn't already done that on the way up.
They're going to try to do some of the...
I don't think we're
going to
find any along our path big enough, Meadow. The very largest ones are off to the right, south of us a bit.
Shepard and Mitchell beginning to traverse back down the Lunar Mountain, the great high rising area going up to the edge of this cone crater rim. They've moved up some 100 meters to 150 meters above their limb landing site. This cone crater is expected to have been some 300 meters wide, about 900 feet across. Quite an interesting thing. This is one of the primary reasons for landing in Framar.
Shepard's O2 suit temperature had peaked in the 80s, but now reading in the high 60s. Mitchell's present readings in the high 70s.
That's not too bad at the moment.
I think it's very good, Red. As a matter of fact, they've had worked so hard climbing that 200-meter high crater.
There appears to be a lot of pebbles, approximately a quarter of an inch on down, to go along with the sides. And the same textured pattern we spoke of before in photographs is also here.
That's Shepard.
Roger.
Now, in coming back down this slope, they're going to pass by D, which is Plank Crater.
Hey, can we stop here and see if we're really going to Weird?
All right. And they're going on past E, where some of the assignments there, including a trench cycle.
Is that Weird right down there, you think?
They think they can see their destination.
Weird is... Weird is almost due east of the limb.
And Alan,
That's readouts on his life support system. Here's Ed.
3.75 min flow. I'm 40% and very comfortable. And there's Weird, Al. You can see the triple crater at the white spot. Crash. Got it. Yep.
Their oxygen.
Yeah,
both of the men's oxygen and remaining oxygen supply looks good. They're working past station E, and hopefully a trench sample originally scheduled there can be accomplished when they get down to Weird Crater.
And getting out down the flank.
They're passing Flank Crater. About halfway down this rim slope. They see a...
He's going to get a quick grab here of a rock, and I'll photograph it because it's got some tremendous fillets on it.
An interesting rock with fillets in it.
Don't hit the fillets till I photograph it. If I want it, let me get a quick shot there.
Taking pictures of it before they pick it up. These men have been trained in geology to know what to pick up. then the scientists can talk past the instructions to them from Earth.
I'll be able to get a piece of that baby. I'm
going to get a piece of that baby, says Shepard.
Oh, man, that's hard, hard, hard.
Very hard rock,
look
Mitchell.
At that belt in it. Piece of it.
I got a piece of it. The scientists ought to be overjoyed to hear this.
Back. Don't lay him back here. Crystals here, don't do it. Okay, that was about, that's about where we...
You're listening to Alan Shepard and Ed Mitchell live as they explore the moon, as they pick up interesting geological samples on our Voice of America worldwide broadcast of the flight of Apollo 14. This is Rhett Turner in Houston with Ed Hickey.
14 in.
Roger, Ed. 14 in.
Solid rock. Large solid rock with an hour left photograph. Okay, let's pull it. You want me to pull one?
Okay.
Just watch everything. You want him to drop off.
So now they've got that one and they're going to move on. They're trying to pick up as much time as they can to make the... They're running a bit behind still.
Doesn't turn over.
Trying to turn over a rock,
so
apparently.
So higher CG now than they had before with that big rock in there.
The center of gravity is different.
Meanwhile, Kitty Hawk, Stu Russo has just finished Descartes photography.
Stuart Russo has taken...
For this, Rev, Russo didn't use the Hikon Lunar Topographic Camera. The Hasselblad with a 500-millimeter lens was used instead. Meanwhile, it is undecided which camera will be used for the Rev coming up for this... photography.
The Hikon camera, the high
16 millimeters bouncing all over the place. Yeah, they could take photos from every view.
The high resolution camera that Stu Russo has hasn't been working properly. And he's photographing Descartes. This is a real mountainous area, much more than even this Fraumaro section, scheduled for one of the next Apollo flights.
Yeah.
They're getting down. They're getting down into the. Oh, here's Shepard calling.
Are you able to see any stratigraphy in any of these craters? The slumping has been such that pretty much destroys. I got this one right here. Any evidence?
Roger, Al, and Sim, position-wise, you're past flank now. Is that correct, or at least the B position of flank?
Checking on their positions coming down the side of the crater.
No, why not, Fredo? We're not trying to hit flank yet. I'd say we're probably 15 minutes away from Weird.
15 minutes away from Weird. This takes a good bit of time.
This is flank right here. Get it on board. I'll get the rock on board. Cheers, Fred.
Roger, and one other question that's up here is to check for the stratigraphy you reported earlier of the light gray white layer below the top. If you see that exposed anywhere,
we're being asked to check on the.
We did not see that until we started approaching the edge of the boulder field. There's no evidence of that at all that we noticed not down this far. One thing I did notice further outside of where we saw the white underneath. But it looked like an impact at either end of the white rock, or it was a splatter of white. And it was
This is Mitchell.
Just outside where Al was reporting that the underlying layer was white. Matter of fact, you know, it's just sun angle is causing it. Right now, some of the spray that we're kicking up looks white underneath, but I'm convinced it's just the angle. I looked back the other way. It's white underneath, but I'm convinced it's just the angle. I looked back the other way, and it's not substantiated.
Ed and Al were...
Mitchell heading downhill now toward Weird Crater, Station F, taking samples along the way.
Expected to take about another 10 minutes to get there. There was a question there about the stratigraphy.
We're at 134 hours, 38 minutes ground elapsed time.
The stratified layers, either in rocks or in earth. They replied they hadn't seen too much, but thought they may have noticed it in some of the white rock formations. The most scientifically interesting thing they've run across.
134 hours, 39 minutes ground elapsed time, and we're at 2 hours, 50 minutes since cabin depressurization. This is Apollo Control Houston continuing to monitor.
They haven't passed this station D on the way down yet.
Pretty well, Fred, at this point. I'd say we're still probably about 10 minutes away from Weird.
Very good, Al. Looks, sounds like you're making a little better time going down than up.
They have then passed the flank crater, which is known as Station D.
Yeah, the slope, different way, Fred.
Still about 20 minutes behind the timeline schedule. They have up to 4 hours, 45 minutes, just under 5 hours.
This case, the man helped.
With a safety margin there.
You don't want me to lose that, baby. That's it right there with the three,
yep.
With the three rocks beyond it.
Yep.
Another 2 hours and 10 minutes, then they stay outside safely.
Frank, we'll have to see it.
All right, there's a big rock. Al's found something interesting. I think Ed's helping him get it out, it sounds like.
It's probably flying right here, isn't it?
When you hear the heavy breathing, remember the astronauts' microphones are right up next to their mouths, so anytime he takes a heavy breath, the small communications microphone accentuates it.
This is really flank. We should have been at the top of the crater where we were. Yeah, I know. I think we've already passed flank.
Okay, it maybe looks down here, Ed, that maybe what you're looking at there, if you got another flank size crater, is the one by E.
This is a big crater. It's 40, 50 meters across. It has a fairly sharp crater in the south edge of it, which is...
Okay, that looks like it may be the one by E.
Yes. Yep. I think that's it, Fredo.
They're making good time if they're bound down to E.
It's at least 50, 60 feet deep.
That is the only extremely deep crater showing in our chart.
He says it's a couple from right here. Yep, okay.
Ed Mitchell reports the crater in front of him is 50 or 60 feet deep. That's almost 20 meters deep. That's a hole big enough for us to see in the photography accomplished by the lunar orbiter several years ago.
Very soft. Yeah, it's falling apart as you pick it up. Very crumbly.
Material they're picking up.
Yep.
Very crumbly,
very
falling
very
apart.
Very soft to rock. Remember that crater? Plus another one fairly close to it with some crystal in it.
That's Shepard.
He's flashing now, going into bay 15 in. Mm.
A copy, 15 in.
Shepard's picked up some rock fragments with crystal in it.
Stay behind you, we wouldn't lose anything there. Okay. Okay, that's where we're going, right there. Yeah, going right for Wick. Head right for the big boulder, then we're right beyond it. All right.
There's another call. You're listening to Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell on the moon, trying to make up the little lost time in their traverse. It took longer than expected to climb this rather steep hill up to the top of the Cone Crater Rim, the most geologically interesting part of the second lunar excursion, and one of the major reasons for the landing here.
Roger it.
Ed Mitchell has turned his backpack back to medium cooling, not exerting as much effort now coming back down the mountain as when they went up. You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. We're broadcasting live reports of astronauts Mitchell and Shepard on the moon.
Diffraction, I guess, around your body, and it creates a halo effect in your shadow, and you just can't see a darn thing right in front of you.
Black sky, sun behind them. Going down sun, meaning the sun's to their backs, they're casting a long shadow in front, in the direction of movement. And in that shadow, they can't see anything, because there's no atmosphere to reflect light and to scatter light. The astronauts decided themselves, in conference with Mission Control, to go out early this morning.
That's about 3 minutes away now from Weird.
About 3 minutes away from Weird Crater, their destination. That's called Station F in the traverse.
Shepard, reporting they're about 3 minutes away from Weird.
Crater we're going by now. We're just to the north of it, Fredo. It's an old subdued crater. You want to run over behind that boulder over there? I'll try to talk to you. The other one has to get behind it and try to talk to you. Oh, that's right. I'll pull a bit. Go ahead. Okay.
Shepard's supposed to get behind a large boulder and try to talk to Ed Mitchell to see if there's an interruption. To see if there's an interruption in their radio communication. This is one of the experiments to be conducted to see that the two astronauts can communicate with each other when they're out of direct line of sight with this UHF and VHF transmission on the backpacks, the radios. Said that boulder wasn't big enough. They'll have to find a bigger one in order to interrupt their direct line of sight. Just short of Weird Crater. They've made up a good bit of time in coming down the side of this hill. You heard, they were instructed to grab some rocks along the way.
Undulating fret, but rises and
this is Mitchell.
Dips everywhere, and you could be going by a fairly good-sized crater and not even recognize it.
The astronauts have been outside about 3 hours now, some 2 hours earlier than expected. Weird Crater is an unusual formation that appears to be an impact of several pieces of material. There's the new instruction. Mitchell says, where are you?
Well, I didn't think so. I think this is it right here. It's too small, I believe. Well,
Al was behind him.
I think I've managed to find it.
I believe they're at the Weird Crater formation now.
Okay, Al, I think the plan will fill us in as to the exact position.
Okay, pan's underway now.
The pan. This means taking pictures, a full panoramic view of the horizon and of the lunar surface around this crater they call Weird Crater. It just looks unusual, and so they've given it an informal name, Weird. Apparently there was an original crater, then something else hit part of it, and it kicked up some more material. They're almost concentric craters in this formation. Oh, this is apparently some 30, 40 meters wide.
Okay,
expected to be there.
Did you get a grab sample of that?
Did you get a grab sample of that? Pick up something.
Shepard, Mitchell now at Weird Crater, completing their two tasks there to pick up lunar samples and take a photo panorama. We're at 134 hours, 48 minutes, ground elapsed time, 3 hours since time of cabin depressurization.
That means by jumping ahead of two of the other stop points, they've just about made up that 20 minutes lost. They are at Weird Crater, 3 hours into the EVA.
Bag 16, is that right?
You heard that report from John McLeish in Mission Control a moment ago. The capsule communicator is Fred Hayes, Ed Mitchell, and Al Shepard on the moon coordinating their sample collection in different types of bags for very accurate documentation. We expect astronaut Buzz Aldrin to join us a bit later to help us wrap up this walk on the moon. The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. You're listening to the live conversations from the lunar surface of astronauts Ed Mitchell and Al Shepard. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. Ed was about to pick up a rock there. Something happened. He kicked it out from under it. They have been dropping down to the surface almost on their knees or just over on one hand, and they can pop back up very easily, either by giving one little shove off the surface with one hand or by having your buddy, the other astronaut, just give you a slight pull in the 1/6 gravity of the moon. It's very easy to drop to the surface and pop right back up. Al Bean and Pete Conrad discovered that quite easily. The astronauts have a flight plan they're following.
Al and Ed, for your stop for with like that, if you can estimate it, one crater diameter short of the crater, North Crater.
There's an instruction from Hayes.
I want to stop one crater diameter short.
That's a firm, because some of the items coming up are the core and the trench. Triple core.
All right, they're going to try to put a triple core tube, three pieces of tubing connected together about a meter long, drive it down into the soil to get a deep sample, and also to dig a trench. That's Mitchell.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, that's the river north right there. Yeah. It's got boulders on it. That's the only thing big enough to have boulders.
They're moving toward the crater area called Triplet.
About one diameter out right now. That's here we are. Right here. The way we've been estimating distances today, that rim has to be at least 6 miles from here. Okay, Houston, we're about one diameter to the east of Triplet. To the west of Triplet,
excuse me. Okay, copied, and
okay.
The number one item is the triple core.
You heard Ed Mitchell say, the way we've been estimating distances today, that rim must be 6 miles from here. Shepard's working on his camera as he attempts to move on toward the crater area called Triplet. You don't have familiar references of things that are a size that you know walking around on the surface of the moon, and they've had some difficulty in estimating distances.
Faster on this traverse back.
Much faster.
CDR's
commander is reading
117. Roger, Al,
117.
That's Al Shepard working with his Hasselblad camera.
Okay, I'll get it. That was system. We've only got two freshmen in here. You've got four out that are used, but it looks like they're used.
Now, the procedure on this meticulous documented sampling calls for photographing a rock or and all the area around an interesting sample before you pick it up, very carefully documenting the area from whence it came. This is enabling scientists to know more about the history of that particular rock when it gets back to the lunar module and back to Earth to the lunar receiving laboratory and then is analyzed. So the documentation procedure is very, very carefully planned. Then that rock is put in a numbered bag, and the ground is told where it came from and when, and this will enable the scientists to put together a series of analyses in following, say, ejecta thrown out of a crater.
Number one tube with a tab,
Fredo. Core tube with a tab. Number one tube with a tab, says Shepard. He's working on that core tube sample. We presume they have arrived near the triplet crater area.
Not one will be number two with a tab.
They're still about, 300 to 400 meters away from the lunar module, working their way back. Triplet crater is one of the major landmarks over which Shepard piloted the craft in landing.
Yeah, the top one will be number three with a tab.
Roger, Al, and subtract off 15 minutes from that 30-minute extension due to
plus
oxygen.
This is Rhett Turner in Houston. We'll be back with more reports of Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell on the lunar surface.
You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. We'll continue that coverage in a moment, but first, a summary of news.
The Apollo 14 lunar explorers are making their second and final trip across the rugged terrain of Frau Maro as the hour draws closer for their departure from the moon. The final period of activities on the lunar face came almost 3 hours ahead of schedule at the request of astronauts Shepard and Mitchell. They said they wanted more time in which to carry out their assignments. During the walk, they hope to collect rocks and soil up to 4,500 million years old, and provide scientists with more information on the origin of the moon. When the astronauts conclude their exploration, they will prepare the lunar craft Antares for departure from the moon with liftoff scheduled for 18 hours 47 Greenwich Mean Time Saturday. The Soviet Union says its moon robot, Lunokhod, will begin its fourth exploration of lunar space later today, one day ahead of schedule. The Soviet robot is operating in the Sea of Rains area, several hundred kilometers north of Frau Maro Highlands, where America's Apollo 14 astronauts are exploring the moon's surface in person. South Vietnamese troops in Cambodia report another major clash with a North Vietnamese unit east of Kampong Cham. VOA correspondent Roger Cowell reports.
Ground fighting raged for about 3 hours, ending just before dawn Saturday. South Vietnamese reported 91 of the enemy killed and one taken prisoner. The dead were from the 272nd North Vietnamese Regiment. South Vietnam reported 10 killed and 37 wounded. Inside South Vietnam, near the southern town of Thai Binh, the enemy lost 58 killed in two clashes in the U Minh Forest. Up in the north, no major contact was reported Saturday in the seventh day of the big South Vietnamese and American operation near the Lao border. Roger Cowell, VOA, Saigon.
The Indian government named a committee to investigate the hijacking of an Indian airliner to Pakistan. The government also asked Pakistan to return immediately the two members of the Kashmir Liberation Front who hijacked the plane and destroyed it in Lahore, West Pakistan. In New Delhi, police fought students trying to attack the Pakistan High Commission for the fourth day in protest against the plane's destruction. More than 300 policemen and 23 students were injured on the third day. In Pakistan, students demonstrated outside the Indian High Commission in Islamabad. There were no reports of injury. The United States is reported willing to discuss a possible Big Four guarantee of a Mideast settlement that may be reached between Israel and the Arabs. VOA diplomatic correspondent Walter Cole says the United States would require that both sides seriously pursue the current peace talks without imposing deadlines on each other. Meanwhile, Israeli Premier Golda Meir criticized Egyptian President Anwar Sadat for urging a partial withdrawal of Israeli forces from occupied areas of the Suez Canal without saying if Egypt would sign a peace agreement with Israel. The Israeli cabinet meets Sunday to discuss President Sadat's proposals, and United Nations Secretary General Thant welcomed the Mideast ceasefire extension for another 30 days. Jordan's King Hussein appealed for national unity and the preservation of peace. In a nationwide broadcast on the eve of the Muslim feast of Al-Adha, the king said that Palestinians must work together as one force. He also said those seeking to divide Jordan do not deserve to live in the country, and he urged all Arab nations to forget their differences for the good of the Arab cause. At least four persons, including a British soldier, were killed in Belfast, Northern Ireland, as troops fought rioters for the third straight night. 12 persons were injured and nearly 40 arrested. The soldier and one civilian were killed in a gun battle that began when machine gun fire raked an army foot patrol. In a second battle in the same Roman Catholic area of the city, another civilian was shot dead by British troops when they came under sniper fire. During the exchange of gunfire, still another civilian blew himself up when a bomb he was about to throw exploded. Troop reinforcements were rushed into Belfast. The violence spread for the first time in some months to Londonderry, where a police station and a post office were attacked. The International Narcotics Control Board says the use and distribution of hashish and marijuana are reaching epidemic levels. The board said even small children are being trapped in the heroin habit. In an annual report issued in Geneva, the board called for approval of a new international treaty to control mind-affecting drugs like LSD. In New York, the United States made an initial payment of $100,000 to the United Nations' new drug abuse program. America pledged a total of $2 million. The UN program is designed to help countries stop illegal drug traffic and improve methods of treatment and prevention of drug abuse. Canada's Minister of Manpower and Immigration, Otto Lang, says the Soviet Union will buy $25 million worth of flour from his country for shipment to Cuba. Mr. Lang said the Soviet flour purchase will be equivalent to 12,300,000 bushels of wheat. It will be shipped from Canada's eastern ports sometime this year. The Soviet Union has been spending $1,300,000 per day to help support the Cuban economy, which long has suffered from serious shortages of food and other goods. Representatives of 27 nations are to begin a week-long conference on air and water pollution next Monday. They will establish an agenda for an environmental conference to be held in Stockholm next year. Maurice Strong of Canada, chairman of the Geneva session, said the delegates may also consider how to obtain international compliance with anti-pollution laws. South African Prime Minister John Forster rejected charges that his country plans to use any arms supplied by Britain against black people inside or outside Africa. Mr. Forster also rejected as pure nonsense charges that his government plans to invade Zambia or Tanzania. Zambia's president, Kenneth Kaunda, has been one of the leading critics of a possible British sale of arms to South Africa. Violence erupted in at least 7 major Italian cities after a 2-hour general strike to protest a hand grenade attack Thursday on a left-wing demonstration in Catanzaro. In Rome, police used tear gas to repulse leftist students who attacked them with firebombs. And rightists and leftists fought in Genoa, Milan, Bologna, Turin, Messina, and Naples. Charles Lindbergh, the first man to fly alone across the Atlantic Ocean, says he thinks further work on development of the supersonic transport plane would be a mistake. He said the SST would add to pollution and create disturbances through sonic booms. A crowd of at least 200 demonstrators threw rocks and firebombs at the Army Reserve Officers' Training Building at the University of California at Santa Barbara, doing extensive damage. The crowd later broke up and formed smaller groups which roamed the streets of a nearby student community, breaking shop windows. Yale, one of America's oldest universities, announced a plan to give students a period of 35 years to pay for their tuition. At the same time, Yale President Kingman Brewster announced an increase in student fees. Last month, New York City police went on strike for 6 days to enforce their demand for extra pay they said was owed them since 1968. A state Supreme Court justice has now ruled their claims are valid. The city says it will appeal the ruling. United States Army Chief of Staff General William Westmoreland and his wife arrived in New Delhi for a week-long goodwill visit to India. General Westmoreland will visit some Indian Army units and training facilities during his stay. The American Army Chief of Staff is returning a visit to the United States last June by the Indian Army Chief. Labor Secretary James Hodson says there are encouraging signs that unemployment in the United States may have reached its highest point and may start to fall. Mr. Hodson says 5,400,000 Americans had no jobs in January, the largest number in 10 years. But he said the percentage of unemployment among the nation's workforce dropped by 0.2% during January to 6%. Mr. Hodson said this is very encouraging. The Nixon administration proposed eliminating 6,000 families from a federal welfare program by changing work requirements. The new rule would affect fathers who, in reality, are working full-time. President Nixon's communications director, Herbert Klein, says Mr. Nixon plans to hold more news conferences. Mr. Klein also said in an interview the president is working on new formats for news conferences and other contacts with the press. President and Mrs. Nixon will host a reception